I think it's been the combination of a lot of factors that's led to the big subscriptions increase we've seen. During lockdown, people have had more time to read magazines and they really appreciate the entertainment they bring. And so they've seen now as the perfect time to sign up as a subscriber.
Welcome back to Media Voices, everybody. I'm Chris Sutcliffe.
I'm Esther Thorpe.
And I'm Peter Houston.
And that extract you just heard is from Jo Checkley, who is the editor of Prima magazine, which is the UK's third biggest selling women's lifestyle title. Now, they've actually defied all trends this year with subscriptions to their print title up 68%. And they've decided to increase their print frequency, three magic words there, next year to 13 issues instead of 12. So we talked about how they adapted their content to cater for their audience during lockdown and what Jo has learned from a career in the challenging women's magazine market.
And it's that time of year again, Media Moments 2020 is coming soon.
Do you think that's what people think about when they think
Absolutely.
About this time of year?
Absolutely, yeah.
Put up your Christmas tree, Media Moments is coming.
Yeah. Well, because this year we've not got that big Coke truck driving round anywhere. Wednesday, the 2nd of December, we're having a virtual event with our partners at What's New in Publishing and our sponsors, our lovely sponsors, Permutive. There are more details on the website, but come along and we'll launch the report. But we've also got a panel where some clever people will be talking about what happened this year. More importantly, what they think might happen next year.
And if you're listening to this after the 2nd of December, you can still download the report. Just go to our website, voices.media, and you'll find it on there.
I messed up.
Yeah, I noticed.
Don't give me instructions, man. I won't follow.
Before these two break out into a brawl, it's probably time to get into our news roundup. And because of Thanksgiving, it's been a relatively quiet news week.
I'm thankful for that.
Yeah, apart from one or two big stories, of which this first one actually has very far-reaching implications for the UK magazine market. So Future PLC, which has been, God, it's been such a turnaround success story recently. It's going to buy the owner of Go Compare in a deal valuing the comparison site at £594 million. So quick explanation on GoCo for our non-UK listeners. It's well known for being a price comparison site, but it also houses Look After My Bills and a discount code site, My Voucher Codes, along with some other things. And Future's now the UK's biggest magazine and digital publisher after its acquisition of TI Media earlier this year. So this really is a sort of coming together of giants.
This came out of the blue though, right? We were all a bit shocked earlier this week.
I was going to say, it wasn't that it confuses. It's that initially, I think, particularly Peter, you didn't understand the motivations behind this.
Initially, I was like, what?
Yeah.
That makes no sense. And then, you know, eventually I got my head around it and freaking genius.
Didn't you think it was just because they were buying Go Compare and I think we all had a relatively narrow view of what Go Compare actually is.
Yeah, I saw Go Compare very much as an insurance sales site. And I wasn't thinking beyond that to the actual comparison, the sort of consumer comparison angle on it. As soon as I got my head around that and kind of joined the dots between that and Future's affiliate revenue, because Future's gone huge on e-commerce. I think affiliate revenues are like a third of their total revenue. And as soon as I joined the dots on that, I thought, oh, man, clever bastards.
So then what is that? Can you join the dots up for us then?
Well, there's a quote from Zilla Bing Thorne, who's the chief exec. And she says, our audiences are increasingly interested in our opinion on the services they might use. So if you've got, I mean, the Future's portfolio is insane in terms of the coverage it got. You know, it's like caravans, air guns, guitars, home decoration, horses and hounds, heavy metal. And if you think that you can put some kind of comparison service on either buying those things, like buying a caravan, or the insurance that you buy to insure your caravan, then it absolutely makes sense. It's that recommendation engine, not a Taboola style recommendation engine or Outbrain recommendation. It's that idea that it's old school publishing. You know, you go to a magazine, you think, oh, what am I going to buy my granddad for Christmas? And you go to a magazine, you go to the gift guide, and you think, oh, here's a lovely shaving set or whatever. And you go to the shop and you buy it. But what this old school publishing technique just has this 21st century kicker now where you can actually buy that stuff directly and the publisher makes money on affiliate. It's such a good model. It really is. You know, the turnaround in future is nuts.
Well, I was going to say, you mentioned that it's kind of an old school publishing model. And back when TI Media was, what, Jesus Christ, when did it become?
It's only been TI for about 3 or 4 years. Yeah. Back when, because they launched that dreadful logo with the awful kerning in it.
That's what you remember.
such a publishing geek, eh?
So it was. Was it Time Inc. UK prior to this?
Yeah, and then it was EMAP before that, was it?
Yeah. But they did, I remember covering this in the very early days of Media Briefing, their idea that they wanted to basically own every single part of that e-commerce chain from kind of the recommendations within the print magazines to the actual selling of the thing. So is this just the same kind of idea but with a more digital bent?
Yeah. I mean, Future's been doing this for a while. Their radar sites are very driven by this. So they had Tech Radar's the best known one, I think. So I want to buy a laptop. I go to Tech Radar. I see the reviews. I think, okay, that's my price point. That's got however many stars from the editors. I'm going to buy it. And it takes me through to wherever, Curry's or whatever. And I actually buy it. And I think what this does is in the bad old days when it was just print, you literally had to take that ad and go to the shop. Now you don't need to leave your seat. You do it on your phone.
This isn't dissimilar from what Dennis did with the secondhand car sites, is it? So the idea is that they've got their car brands and that if you want to then buy a car, you can literally go through to another Dennis site and buy the car. Just it's not worked out quite as well for them because Brexit and the car market is generally just bottoming out.
Well, it did work out well for them until it didn't.
Yeah, until the car market basically
until
collapsed.
The world changed, yeah.
Well, actually, that's a really good point because isn't TI Media's entire thing, I mean, they have sites like, what is it, your Yachting and Boating World, where you can then go to buy boats directly from that site. So that e-commerce thing, it runs through the new Future PLC like, you know, a stick of rock.
If you've never looked at Future's brand page, do it. It is mental. It absolutely, Yachting and Boating World that you've just mentioned. They've also got Windows Central just across the page. They've got Tom's Hardware. Techno Buffalo. What is Techno Buffalo? I mean, seriously, it is mental what they've got. They've got shooting magazines. And they've got stuff that you knew about. SFX, Prog and the music magazines. They've got women's magazines like Pick Me Up.
So I suppose the thing here is are they going to turn that kind of comparison technology beyond just kind of what GoCompare do at top level with sort of insurance and all the rest of it and say, actually, you know, if you're searching for, let's say you're searching for barbecues on their new garden brand, are they going to bring in the price comparison around the type of barbecue you're hoping to buy?
I would have thought so, yeah. I mean, I'm sure it's easier when you're talking about high-value items like caravans. Maybe less so when you're talking about air guns. But actually, I don't know. I don't know how much an air gun costs.
Yeah, I've got no idea.
I mean, this is a massive win for GoCo.
Yeah,
like,
definitely.
They basically get an entire massive content marketing arm.
Well, they've got the biggest
in the UK.
Yeah, absolutely. their cost of acquisition will come down. The reach goes up, the cost of acquisition comes down. Actually, Future paid a 24% premium for the shares in the first place. So the GoCo's shares went up 10% on the news, while Future's went down.
Yeah, I saw that.
I think Future's went down 15%. Because people are saying, oh my God, you haven't even properly digested TI Media yet. But
you're talking there about not having completed that like digestion of TI. But they found added synergy. You know when? Yeah, I know. You know when you buy another company and you sort of say, "Well, look, this is going to help us cut costs across the thing." They found additional cost cutting things, which is
been better than they thought it would.
That was what shocked me most about this announcement. Is it was the timing. I thought it'd be another, you know, give it another 6 months until they really did anything else big, just to give them time to get. I mean, you know, look at the year we've had, and they only completed that. Was it May, June time?
It's all, I guess it's also quite a competitive market, the whole comparison site thing. You've got the one that Esther just mentioned.
You've got Compare the Meerkat.
Confused. Compare the Market and what else?
And where's Money Supermarket fit into that?
Oh, there you go.
That's Money the other one. That's the fourth.
And that's the other thing that they're talking about doing is newsletters, recommendation, like advice newsletters. So there's a quote somewhere. I don't know. I think it may be in the FT. Where one of these analysts is saying that Zella Bingthong is the most impressive chief exec in the UK.
Yeah, I can well believe that.
They have
the
also
speed of it as well.
They have also been lucky this year. Obviously, a lot of the groundwork for this has been in the years prior, but if they'd done the same thing and gone hard on events and decided that that was going to be their third revenue stream, they'd have been a bit screwed. I think it's just the fact that they, you know, e-commerce is great, e-commerce is growing, but it's also been accelerated hugely by the pandemic. So I think, their pre-tax profit is up 300% this year because people have been sitting at home buying stuff on the internet. And there is a little bit of luck in there in which markets have been affected this year.
Yep. Well, luck or foresight in the sense that events are definitely...
They're more exposed to this kind of stuff, isn't it? It's just that's been highlighted this year.
That's companies like Informa now all of a sudden are online learning and information companies instead of event companies.
Whereas if you look at e-commerce, had obviously it's accelerated, why is it like 5 years worth of growth in like 3 months or whatever?
Yeah.
But that was always growing steadily. That was a sound bet. It just probably would have taken longer to actually get these returns.
Yeah.
I also think that's shaped by the markets that they were in. You know, they were in niche consumer markets where people like Informa were in like B2B markets, and events worked in B2B where this kind of e-commerce just wouldn't have worked in B2B unless you can create marketplaces or auction sites. God, that was a boring sentence.
How do we put a bow on that one?
God, that was a boring sentence. Let's move on.
Well, I'm actually shocked that neither of you have attempted to do an impression of the opera singer yet.
Oh, my God. I'm going to hang on. Let me just mute myself in case Peter does it.
I'm not.
All right, thank God for that.
I've not got the depth of voice.
Actually, I probably could, to be honest.
Look at that. That rapid turnaround.
Go compare.
That was actually quite impressive.
Yeah. Hey. It was very good.
So after that, onto the news in brief, which we're not going to be able to top. So the UK government has said it's going to create, and it announced this literally just after I'd finished my platforms chapter, so it's not in media moments. It said that it's going to create a competition regime called the Digital Markets Unit, which is going to be set up to tackle the fundamental imbalance of power between platforms and publishers. So basically it's going to be there to, and I'm going to say try and govern the commercial relationships, and to try and make sure that platforms aren't imposing terms that limit publishers' abilities to monetize their content. So basically, they're looking to scab off Australia's code, which has caused massive controversy this year.
I think what's interesting about this is the general sense of government regulation that's coming to the platforms.
Yeah.
And Netflix just agreed to pay tax in the UK on its UK business.
Good.
And I think that is about avoiding this kind of regulation.
Yeah.
Hoping to cut it off at the pass.
I did see somebody tweet, isn't it fucked up that they agreed to do this rather than it being something that they just have to do?
Absolutely.
But then I think with the way that these things end up being implemented, like, you know, there are some good things to the Australia Code, but there are also some really big flaws in that it's not the way the internet works.
Yeah.
And you're trying to impose these regulations, these local regional regulations on a global internet it's...
But surely the idea that you pay tax in the place that you do the business, I mean, where you collect the money, And surely that is...
Tax, yes.
A no-brainer.
I feel like tax is beyond the purview of Media Voices.
I was going to say, just download Media Moments, read the chapter, because it's all a bit of a mess.
Hey, well, speaking of that, and Australia, the public broadcasters ABC and SBS are no longer barred from receiving payments from Google and Facebook for using their content. So more confusion, I suppose, more fuel thrown onto the fire in this. But it was described by a Google spokesperson as akin to forcing users back to the Yellow Pages model and a return to valuation being based on political clout rather than journalistic worth. So, Esther, exactly what you were talking about there, trying to apply an old model to kind of this new digital world, and it's just thrown up endless caveats and loopholes and just impossible situations.
Why was the ABC and SBS barred from receiving payments? Are they public broadcasters?
They're public broadcasters, yeah.
Right. The House of Lords has reported that they're recommending setting up a new cross-industry scheme to teach media literacy. I wish they would, but do you trust them to do this?
Well, yeah. So this
also, the kids aren't the problem.
This is a very, very minor part of the entire House of Lords report into kind of the state of journalism. The old people, as the report flags, typically are the ones who fall for online disinformation most often. The problem is that the young people of today are tomorrow's old people. And unless you kind of teach the basics of media literacy, then I feel like this is going to happen again. And Reach PLC has managed to grow its digital revenue 16% over the last 5 months.
That's not bad.
Although it hasn't been enough to make up for a 20% collapse in print revenue, which is bringing group revenues down 14% overall. So when we do our next Future of Print special, this is something we need to include.
That's in the last 5 months. Jesus Christ.
I know, but Peter, print's dead.
Yeah, no, it's not. Read the chat.
We're literally about to speak to Print Magazine, who's increased their issues. So
yeah, exactly.
No, print's dead, man. Print's dead, man.
Well, you need some media literacy, my friend.
Spotify is the latest to jump on the Stories bandwagon. This is the things I did not expect to read this week. So Spotify testing Stories, which are like the 24-hour... Fleet, whatever platforms have got it now, everybody. But they're using it as a way for artists and companies to connect with their audiences. And this is a really unusual move, given that Spotify is a long way off being any sort of social network.
Some people use it that way.
There's some pretty good social features in Spotify.
We'll see. What
do you know why I think Stories is the dumbest thing?
Come on.
LinkedIn.
Yeah.
I have an ephemeral view on this business. I need to post it now.
Exactly.
But the joke about Stories coming to XL is just getting closer and closer.
They got Doom running on XL, so it's going to happen sooner or later.
So this week I spoke to Jo Checkley, editor of Prima magazine. She talked about fostering a community through magazines, adapting to remote workflows and more. But I started by asking her where this surge in subscribers has come from.
Yes, well, thank you. Yes, it has been a difficult year for everybody, but a great year for some areas, and that's for Prima. I think it's been the combination of a lot of factors that's led to the big subscriptions increase we've seen. During lockdown, people have had more time to read magazines, and they really appreciate the entertainment they bring. And so they've seen now as the perfect time to sign up as a subscriber. On top of that, with Prima specifically, alongside obviously all our great interviews and features, we have a lot of content that's focused on arts and crafts. And that's something that a lot of people have taken up this year. It links to mindfulness and it links to well-being. So people have seen having more time as a time they can do more crafts, for example, sewing and knitting. And in fact, our sewing pattern has proved so popular over the past 12 months, which has been great. And I think that's all helped with a need to get the magazine into their hands. And we've also had a great marketing campaign geared towards getting new subscribers. And it's had the message, Prima is like sitting down for a chat with your best friend, which really resonates, because that's really what Prima's all about. It's about being here for you.
Was that a social media campaign, or is that something that has been running elsewhere? Basically, where have you discovered these readers?
Yeah, well, everywhere and anywhere. I think it's certainly been social. It's been in magazine. It's been on different media platforms. So it's got out there. It's got great news. We've got great subscription offers and promoting what Prima's all about. And that's very much this idea that Prima's your friend, it's your entertainment, and it's there for you during difficult times and good times.
Do you think there's going to be quite a bit of word of mouth there as well with the way with the audience segment you're targeting? You know, if people have got to isolate and spend a lot of time alone, that they'll sort of say to their friends, oh, you know, I know a really great magazine if you want something to do.
Definitely. That's exactly what our readers are all about. They love to share, and they're all about their friends and their family. And while, yes, appreciate they might not have been able to see all their friends and family, certainly they would have talked to them or communicated with them. And they do share the magazine. We know that. They share what's in it. And certainly people say that they pass it on to different members of their family. Obviously, I always encourage them to buy one each, but you can't have it all the way. And they love to share what's the content. And then they love to send in pictures and letters and emails to show us what they're enjoying.
Yeah. So your print magazine is now going to be producing 13 issues a year rather than 12. I just love the fact that there's been a print increase story this year. That's great. What will this extra issue look like?
Well, we're just busy planning the content of that extra issue at the moment. But what we'll be doing for sure is focusing on all the most popular bits of Prima. So there'll be extra craft, and there'll be the gorgeous sewing and knitting patterns and the pretty makes that you can do for your home. And of course, delicious things to bake. And how we'll do it is that we'll run the issues for 4 weeks exactly. So normally the magazine dies for the calendar month. So yes, it fits in that way. And, you know, it's a great news story in a very difficult year. But the decision behind that extra issue was actually quite an easy one. We have such a loyal reader base, and they're looking for more content. And with our subscriptions up by 68%, we thought it made perfect sense to add this extra issue a year.
Wow. Is the commercial support there behind the scenes as well? Like, are advertisers happy to come to you with an extra issue's worth of advertising?
Let's hope so. For sure, that's what we'll be looking for. And I think they'll be very responsive, because actually, in many ways, working on a 4 week basis, the magazine will run months more true to the month that we're out in. Obviously, normally monthly magazines work ahead of schedule. So in that respect, there's great advertising opportunities, because you're working, it's much more time specific. So I think it's going to be really good.
Fingers crossed. And then from an editorial perspective, a lot of print magazines tend to work quite a few months ahead. So, you know, you'll be producing issues for February, March now. So when we went into lockdown, how did you kind of shape your content strategy when you had to almost work so far ahead?
Well, it has been difficult. Yeah. And like everyone else, it's been such a difficult year, and it's been difficult to plan ahead when everything's so changeable. But the one main thing is that Hearst, we're all about positivity, and we want to be a beacon of positivity for our readers. And it's something we've always strived for. So with that in mind, we're not ignoring the pandemic, but we're focusing on how to help our readers tackle it and keep positive and safe during it. So we focused on that, and we featured in the magazine different subjects that can drive that positivity. So we've looked at, for example, an easy pick-me-up, so instant ways to feel brighter, whether that's as simple as getting outside to enjoy nature or having a declutter or bake yourself into a good mood. They all help. And we've concentrated, obviously, on health. For example, looking at the 10 supplements that are really worth taking, or the power of vitamin D, and how to help with bad sleep habits. And we've, of course, included more craft, more puzzles, more on best books to read. And another point is that we've shared real life stories on how different women have coped with tough times during the year. And I think they've proved very inspirational. And we've celebrated our community heroes. So we've had women who have done baking for the villagers or making scrubs. And in fact, there was one local running group, instead of going for their normal run, were using their exercise time to deliver medical supplies to vulnerable residents. So we've wanted to show the positive, even in the most dire of situations.
Oh, that's really lovely. Although I can imagine, even putting together a Christmas issue must have been quite strange this year, when we just don't know what Christmas is like. We still don't know what Christmas is going to look like.
For sure, yes. I mean, that is hard when you're planning in advance. But again, by focusing on the constants, the fact that we want to have the best Christmas we can, to make it as special as we can, whatever the situation, whatever the rules that we're going to be in place. And very much our Christmas issue that's out at the moment has done that. So we've taken on board that you're still going to want to have lovely food to eat. You're still going to want to make the house, and actually even more importantly, make your house look lovely because you're in your house. And keep it obviously to small groups of people that you'll be celebrating with. So we're trying to keep that promise for Prima of make it the best it can be. And that certainly worked for us.
Almost an antidote to the news cycle then.
Definitely.
How about actual creation? Because your teams are presumably quite used to going out to photo shoots, going out to interviews, but that's now presumably mostly remote.
Yes, well, we've worked this by pulling together as a team. We've adapted to working remotely really well. We all have access to Microsoft Teams, and we make sure that most of hosting meetings virtually. There have been periods of time in the year when we could meet in the office, although, of course, now we're all back in lockdown working from our homes. But we've conducted interviews over the phone or Zoom, and that's become pretty easy. And when it comes to shoots, we've always stuck to the government guidelines. So we've either had cover stars being shot by someone in their bubble, or we've used photos from previous shoots. In fact, for one of our fashion shoots, we had a model who happened to be going, her partner was a photographer. So that worked brilliantly for us. And they actually shot them in Paris, the pictures, and was all done totally safely. We got some gorgeous shots from it. And it's meant we've had to be creative, but that's not always a bad thing. And certainly, as I was saying in our December Christmas issue, which is the one that's out now, is a lovely shoot we did with some frontline heroes. And it was our way to say thank you to the NHS. So we got six women, and there was like a ward sister, a paramedic, a healthcare assistant, and we treated them to a lovely makeover, and the pictures looked amazing. But the shoot was all done under the toughest of COVID regulations. So none of the women were actually in the studio together. They were spread out through the day and everything, you know, cleaned in between, sanitised. And then with a little bit of photo wizardry, we brought them all together for the final pictures we used in the magazine. And it was a stunning result. But we also, I did mention that in the magazine to the reader so that they were clear, we're following the rules. But equally, let's not compromise on a great shoot. So it looked great, but it was followed totally to the regulations.
Do you think when it comes to content creation for magazines that there are going to be lessons that we've learned from maybe being able to do things a bit more flexibly this year that we're going to take into next year? Or do you think it'll very much revert to as soon as we can, it'll be everybody in person again?
No, I think there are important lessons, and I think it's important we do learn from those lessons. I know talking to my colleagues, a lot of them found being able to work from home a very much positive. I'm not saying it's something you'd want to do all the time and always, but to get that combination of people who have adapted their lives to be able to have that extra time that is allowed in that you're not commuting. So I think that's been important. I think it's been made us also realise that it's important to connect with one another. And while I say we've done Zoom meetings, we've also done fun Zoom meetings. So we've had quizzes and we've had virtual drinks. So we've all sort of arrived with a glass of something and had a chat. And I think it's important to remember how much we all do need one another and that we are a team. So whether we're split up or not, we work together as a team. But certainly there will be lessons that we've learned and we'll take forward to next year. And hopefully, in a positive way, that makes people's working lives that little bit easier.
Yeah. And you mentioned the campaign that had run across social media. What does your social media strategy look like? Because presumably your demographic are slight, they're going to be on very different platforms to what we'd normally expect.
Yes. Well, Prima has around 10,000 followers on Instagram, as well as more than 13,000 on Twitter. And we also have our online site, which is extremely popular. But you're absolutely correct. Our social media channels tend to be in an older age bracket. So they're not such a central part of our strategy as some of the magazines, perhaps with a younger audience. But having said that, the online sites proved very popular and a lot of great e-commerce, especially with our face masks, that we've seen great sales through face masks. And also we did a great no-sew face mask pattern online, which proved very popular. It's extremely important to the brand, but it's seen as a sort of as an extra, which really feeds into Prima. But certainly our readers do love the print side as well.
Yeah. Aerial newsletter is a big feature?
Yes, extremely, yeah. We have a really successful newsletter. And in fact, it has, I think, has one of the highest open rates within the company, in that our readers are so responsive to it. So that's a great way of keeping everybody connected and keeping them up to date on the latest parts of Prima and what's coming up as well.
And what are your plans when it comes to, you've got all these new subscribers now, we're obviously hoping that as life gets back to normal, people retain those magazines. Have you got a sort of plans or campaigns to for retention next year?
Well, certainly that's our absolute key to us. So I think it's about making sure that the content in the magazine matches and exceeds what our subscribers are expecting. And that's something I have huge confidence in. We have the best team of writers who really get a wonderful mix of content, and they make sure that there's something on every page that our readers really connect with. And I think it's really key that we keep coming up with fresh ideas. And that's obviously my job, to keep thinking up the different ways of entertaining our readers. And we've always on my mind. So there's lots to look forward to over the next year. Lots of exciting things coming up.
Yeah, because hopefully we shouldn't be looking for knitting patterns all of next summer.
Well, I hope they do in a way, but certainly there's, I mean, one of our most key campaigns we did recently actually was a knitting pattern campaign, in that we were, there are two things about the Prima reader. They love their crafts, as I've mentioned, but they also love looking after, they're very responsive to helping others. And we launched a campaign to save the British hedgehog. And we had a knitting pattern in the magazine for making the cutest little hedgehog. And I put it in there thinking, well, if the idea was that you make the hedgehog and you send it in to us, and we'll give it to the British Hedgehog Preservation Society. And who would they? They would then raise money for their charity by getting donations for these lovely hedgehogs. I didn't really, you know, I thought it was a lovely thing to do, but I didn't really expect a huge response. And I ended up with literally hundreds of lovely, lovely knitted hedgehogs in the office. They kept coming in, and these wonderful readers, they'd not only gone to all the bother of buying the wool, making these hedgehogs, and then putting them in the post, packaging them all up, sending them to me, only because they wanted to help. And their lovely notes they attached them saying, you know, sorry it took me so long to knit, I hope it's okay, I just want to help the hedgehogs. And that is the true nature of the Prima reader, that they really care for others and they're really willing to help. So it was a hugely successful campaign that I hadn't foreseen. And in fact, one of the hedgehogs even ended up on BBC One's The Repair Shop. I was watching the television one night and saw it there on the shelf. And subsequently, I visited The Repair Shop to do a feature for our December issue, and I said, oh, I think you've got one of our hedgehogs, and they delighted in that, and it truly was a Prima hedgehog.
That's brilliant. And just as a final, you've worked in the women's magazine market for quite a while, and it's been quite a challenging decade. So what are some of the things you've done, apart from hedgehogs, which I absolutely love, as an editor, to adapt and keep the magazines thriving kind of despite the market conditions?
That's an interesting one. I think the key for me is always I'm listening to my audience. The Prima reader is really responsive, as we've said, and it's clear when they're connecting with something. As I mentioned with the hedgehogs, that was clear that they enjoyed doing that. And for me, that drives me on to think of new ways to create different features and articles that really will resonate with them. And because I've got such a strong connection with my readership, it's very easy to understand what they're feeling at a certain time, what they're reacting to. And for me, that really keeps the magazine fresh. So I'm always looking for the latest topics that are concerning my readers. And then I'll feed that into the magazine in the most relevant way I can. But that for me is key, always key.
And then the last thing we ask all our guests is, what's the last thing you read or saw which really affected you?
I think that's a tough one, because there are so many things I read and see on a daily basis that get to me or make me think. But one thing that really stirred me, and I don't know if you saw it, but it was the former ballerina who had with Alzheimer's, who danced to Swan Lake. It was a Spanish charity who had seen that music improve the lives of their dementia patients. And they showed a video of the patient Martina Gonzalez. And she was a former ballerina who was transformed as she listened to Tchaikovsky's Swan Lake. So she'd once danced it as a Prima ballerina, and you saw the pictures of her as a young woman in the 1960s dancing, and then you saw this frail old lady doing the moves as she sat in her wheelchair. But what was astonishing was how she remembered all the moves, how she was able to present her arms so perfectly. It was absolutely astonishing and reminded me of both the fragility of life, but also the ability of the human brain to store and relive such exquisite memories. It was stunning. You must have a look at it.
Yeah, so we've covered a lot in that news roundup this week, everything from trust to print to platforms, all sorts. And if you want to read more about what's happened this year in all of those areas and where it could head next year, you are invited to our Medium Moments 2020 launch event on Wednesday, where we'll be presenting our annual report. There'll also be a panel of experts. We're going to be joined by Jemima Villanueva from The Atlantic and Andrew Barblick from The Week Junior US. So if you missed that event, don't worry, you can still download the report from our website. Just go to voices.media and it should be available there from Wednesday.
And it's been a hell of a lot of work for all of us, but especially Esther, so please...
It looks so pretty though.
For it. That website is voices.media. While you're there, you can check out all our archive of episodes, including transcriptions for each and every one, and our conversations episodes as well. While you're there, you may as well also sign up to our newsletter, which goes out every single weekday and includes a link to the four most important stories that we found that week. And we also send out special Saturday editions, which are curated by a friend of the Media Voices podcast. You can also find us on social at Media Voices Pod on Twitter.
Thank you so much for listening. Next week, we're back not with an excellent guest as usual, but with a recording of our launch event for Media Moments 2020. So if you missed the event, you can hear it the following week. But until then, take care, stay safe, bye-bye.
Bye.
Ta-ta.
Love that.